south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again after a week or so layoff. Nope, I was not sitting on my dead ass in a beach chair sucking down margaritas. I was on the move during one of my expat insider seminars. And man, what a really great group of people we had this time. Not a clinker in the bunch. Man, showing my age, huh? You have to be a boomer to know what a clinker is. Oh, and for the uninitiated, a clinker is what you get after you burn coal in your furnace. It's the leftover part that won't burn. This stuff accumulates at the bottom of a coal-burning furnace, and you have to shovel it out once in a while, or, well, you won't be able to get any fresh coal in. So, therefore, when you use the term clinker, it refers to something that's useless, beyond useless. Lots of clinkers in this world. It's a prerequisite for getting a government job. So, anyway, as mentioned at the seminar, not a clinker in the bunch. Oh, but with other seminars, man, we have had our clinkers. In fact, I'll never forget one particular lady who was such a clinker that people started coming up to me on the very first day. Remember, the seminar lasts an entire week, and people would come up to me, tap me on the shoulder, and say, Johnny, do me a favor. At the dinners, you know, the restaurants, please don't sit me next to you-know-who. So then what made her such a clinker? Well, she was just an abrasive know-it-all. If you got in a conversation with her, she wouldn't listen to you. She wouldn't let you talk. You know the type, you know, people who are absolutely in love with the sound of their own voice. Hey, wait a minute. Sounds a lot like me. Just kidding. Maybe. Anyway, lots of strange and interesting things happened along the way to and at the seminar itself. Now, you probably know, of course, the seminar took place half in Guatemala and half in El Salvador. First thing I want to mention is that the people of El Salvador absolutely love Bukele. I mean, you get into a taxi cab, you don't even have to ask. They start talking about Bukele. Funny thing, too, he completely cleaned up the crime issue. Good example. I've been visiting El Salvador for years, and there's always cops everywhere. There was a time before Bukele when all the cops even wore ski masks so that the bad guys didn't recognize who they were, and thus extract revenge against their families. And now, on this trip, I don't think I saw a single cop. And the airport used to be filled with teams of cops, and now, almost none. And you know, when visiting Latin America, that's always kind of a sticky point with tourists and gringos. When they see lots of cops everywhere, they're thinking, why? Why is there a truckload of cops on that street corner? Why are there 10 military guys standing near the entrance to that Mayan ruin? It's a double-edged sword, sends two different signals, doesn't it? But I've noticed all of that has gone from El Salvador, because all the bad boys are in jail. And man, is that country booming. Everywhere you go, there's construction sites going up everywhere. Malls, houses, road projects. And everybody's got a job. Though inflation has kicked in, just like it has everywhere in the world. And why wouldn't it, especially in Salvador, where they use the U.S. dollar and, of course, Bitcoin? As we know, the U.S. dollar is being printed out of existence. As for Bitcoin, most people don't use Bitcoin except for gringos and expats making land purchases, for example, or moving money around. Sure, you can buy a cup of coffee there with Bitcoin, but almost no one's doing it. Why would they? Even taxi drivers will tell you they use Bitcoin, what little they have of it, as a savings account. Because, you see, everyone got $30 worth of Bitcoin when the project first started a couple of years back. And most people, probably 95% of them, didn't know what the hell to do with it, didn't know how to operate their little Chivo wallets. They're called Chivo wallets, by the way. C-H-I-V-O, Chivo. That's how every person in Salvador got their 30 bucks in Bitcoin, on a Chivo online wallet. A freebie gift to all citizens from the government. Anyway, most people didn't know what the hell it was or what to do with it, so they just kind of forgot about it. Now, those who did forget about it have seen their Bitcoin appreciate almost three times the original value to almost $100. And now tens of thousands, if not millions, of Salvadoreños are seeing that Bitcoin, if you hold on to it, is infinitely better than a bank account that constantly shrink due to inflation. By the way, just 2 years ago, when all the Bitcoin was handed out by the government, more than half of all the Salvadoranos didn't even have a bank account. Isn't that funny? People who never even had a bank account are suddenly learning about basic finance from the ground up, but in a completely high-tech way through Bitcoin. They've learned a great lesson that Bitcoin's not for spending on a cup of coffee or a pupusa or a dozen tortillas. It's something to hold on to because in the long run, it appreciates like no asset has ever done. In the case of El Salvador, that $30 in the Chivo wallet has appreciated nearly 300% in 2 years. Do you know how long it would take $30 to triple if you had it in a standard bank account? At today's bank account interest rates, slightly over 1%, more than 100 years. And don't forget that by then, inflation would have wiped out your account completely. By the way, as much as inflation hurts everyone, you know, the third world is used to it. Nearly every Latin American country has had extreme inflation compared to what the first world has seen. It's been the norm down here for the past 50 or so years. They're sort of used to it. That's why they spend everything they have. They save almost nothing. And you know, until about 2021, when that COVIDiot thing came around and massive money printing became a norm up in the first world, Americans, Europeans, and Canadians never realized the full impact of what high monetary inflation could do to a country. Yeah, well, first world folks are learning that lesson full well now. Massive money printing is just one big step on the way to becoming third world. Americans, Europeans, and Canadians are certainly learning that lesson now. All right, speaking of the seminar, I'd like to read you a part of an email from a seminar attendee, Paul, a super nice, super cool, very intelligent guy who stayed on an extra week. He's going through the Guatemalan residency hoops. Here's what he writes, and I'll paraphrase. He says, "Johnny, I came to Guatemala for the seminar a week early. I'm taking the week very easy by just walking around a little bit in Zone 9 and 10. All right, me Johnny here. You know, Guatemala City is divided into 25 zones or neighborhoods. And Paul's talking about Zone 10, which is a very nice zone, and Zone 9, which has some good parts and some iffy parts. Anyway, he goes on to say, yesterday, I was fortunate enough to be greeted by one of three drunk Guatemalan gentlemen. One of them called out, hey, white boy. Now, Johnny, he was a happy drunk, and I wasn't getting any kind of evil vibes at all, so I talked to them. Who would have known that two of the three spoke perfect English? Turns out they were deported from the U.S. and were working at the UPS call center support lines in Guatemala City. He says, Johnny, when I found that out, I chuckled to myself as I recalled stories from your informative podcast during my lovely conversation with three drunk guys. Then he says, walking along in Zone 10, I checked out Oakwood Mall. Man, I was impressed at the way all the stores were so well-staffed, with well-mannered people, very well-stocked too, clean and tidy. It reminds me, Johnny, of how malls in the U.S. used to be 20 years ago, before strip malls took over. So anyway, that's what he wrote just before the seminar started. Now, when he mentioned he met those three drunk guys that were deported from the U.S. and working at a call center in Guatemala, maybe you longtime listeners heard me mention, I'm talking long ago, probably 6, 7, 8 years ago now, the U.S. used to catch illegals and send them back to Guatemala City and other parts in Latin America by air. Sometimes there'd be two, even three flights a day returning Guatemalans to Aurora International Airport in Guatemala City. And most of those guys at the time, at least 90 to 95% of them, were not illegals that just slipped in recently, picked up at the border. Most were illegals that had been living in the States for years and therefore picked up a lot of English on the street, making them perfect call center material. So then how'd they get caught by U.S. immigration? Well, most of them did not get caught by U.S. immigration. They got caught first by the local cops, wherever those Latinos were living. And when they produced an ID that didn't pass muster, that's when immigration got involved. So then you might wonder, how'd they get singled out by the cops? Well, often it was driving and committing traffic violations because, you know, po folks have po habits and they bring them with them. Or picked up for being drunk and disorderly. Maybe a pissed off landlord tipped off the cops. You know, lots of illegals in the States get nabbed on domestic violence calls. You know, wife and girlfriend beating is very common down here. Don't think I've ever met a Latina who hasn't been hit by a guy. Many illegal Latinos up in the States just get picked up for petty crime. And you know, lots of illegals up in the States work in loosely regulated industries like big meatpacking plants. And sometimes those plants get raided by immigration. And previous to 2021, the COVIDian thing, illegals caught that way quickly end up on planes being deported back to their home countries like Guatemala. Obviously, up in the States, they're not doing much of that anymore. You know that. Though occasionally, just occasionally, I've noticed a plane will come into Guatemala International Airport, another load of returning illegals. And it beats me how all the call centers located in Guatemala City, there must be 25 of them, maybe more. They know exactly when those planes are landing because, and I've seen this, there are representatives from the call centers waiting right there as the people exit the airport, handing out pamphlets saying, come join our call center if you speak any English. Even if it's just a little, we'll train you up. And man, I'll tell you, a huge number of people go down to those call centers and sign up, mostly because they instantly offer a $500 signing bonus. How do I know that? I've read the pamphlets. They'd probably even hire me. So what we've got is the fact that in the United States, it's a training ground for call center jobs once Latinos get deported back to their home country. Isn't that cool? Talk about unintended consequences, huh? By the way, call center jobs here in Latin America pay about twice the minimum wage, about $600 a month. So, in fact, they're very desirable. But as you probably know, there are very tough jobs, too, because you've got quotas, so many calls and sales to make, whatever kind of call center you might be working for. And normally, I hear it takes about 6 months at a call center before you're completely burnt out. But man, I'll tell you, if you're going to start a business down here and have employees, those are the best employees to have. Those have been trained by a call center. Because after about 6 months in a call center, their English is very, very good. And they've been trained to be prompt, so they've had the mañana time thing beaten out of them. Those call center survivors, anyway. In fact, some of my best seminar ladies, including my number one, Rita, she's been my seminar logistics lady for at least 5 years now. She is one of those call center survivors with almost perfect English, and she understands what first world businesses require of their employees. Sure, you'll have to fine-tune them when you train them up, but the call centers have done 90% of that for you. By the way, you know who runs some of the biggest call centers here in Latin America? Xerox. Nope, they don't make copiers anymore. They've moved into call centers, and that's where the real money is. Oh, and talking about U.S. Immigration Control, ICE. What a joke. Just another lard-ass cancerous government institution. And it's been that way for years. You know, I mentioned this on my show many years ago, so probably you don't remember. My brother used to run a gigantic meatpacking plant that made almost all the McDonald's and Wendy's meat patties for the entire USA. They ran three shifts constantly in North Chicago. And he had, at times, 400 or 500 employees under him. He told me 95% of them were illegal Latinos, but they all had IDs and social security numbers, all fake. But it wasn't the company's job to determine whether they were fake or not. As long as they could show an ID, they got hired. Now, my brother was in control of the whole plant during his shift. So he walked the floor all the time and he knew all his workers. That's how he learned his awful ghetto sort of Mexican barrio street Spanish. He said those illegals worked their asses off. Though he did say they liked to drink a lot. They'd come in with hangovers sometimes, but they worked their asses off. Some of them lost fingers, hands, and arms too along the way. You know, you come in drunk, you get your hand caught in a machine. Well, that's why my brother always said anyone who eats at a fast food hamburger joint is an unknowing cannibal. Because for sure they'd shut off the machines when there was an accident. But do you really think they're going to throw out thousands of pounds of beef just on account of someone's fingertip getting inadvertently caught in the mix? Now, of course, he said that didn't happen every day, but maybe every month or so, and more during the holidays. More guys with hangovers, you know. And he did say immigration, ICE, would raid the place once in a while. But they picked up no great numbers of illegals because there was a grapevine between the meatpacking plants in the Midwest. Turns out, he said, a couple of hours before ICE would arrive, someone in the plant would get a phone call, and within 20 minutes, everyone who did not have a decent ID that would pass muster would be out the door in AWOL for the rest of the shift. Anyway, just a little inside information about illegals, meatpacking plants, and fast food joints. And the moral of that story? There ain't nothing happy about a Happy Meal. All right, moving on. Let's catch up on another email. This one's from Fred. He says, Johnny, and I'll paraphrase this a bit. He says, Johnny, I'd love to be down there at your seminar. I'd love to be down there permanently as it is, but although we've gone for many visits, the wife and I, to Mexico, my wife is dead set against spending more than a week or two, or maybe stretching it to a month, anywhere far from home. It's all about the kids and the grandkids. Fact is, Johnny, we have a pretty nice place here in Northern California, but that Plan B idea, which I've been talking about for 30 years to the wife, just doesn't resonate with her. She just doesn't get it. I tell her our future here in California, as nice as it is right now, is going to be just cat food floods and forest fires in the future. She says I'm just a dyed-in-the-wool pessimist. Meanwhile, she talks about how the world is going to die from climate change unless Trump ruins everything first. You know, Johnny, I think I'm just stuck here. All right, me, Johnny, button in for a second. There's more to this email, but let's hit on that point for a second. You know, Fred, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that same old song. I'm talking about husband and wife who are not on the same page at all. One of them wants to get the hell out of Dodge. The other one is comfy and cozy where she or he is right now. Though I have to say more often than not, it's the wife who does not want to leave. And as much as the man of the house, I can still say that, can't I? Or let's just say the person with the swinging reproductive appendage wants to get a Plan B, get the hell out of Dodge, he'll never quite make it past the border because his other half just won't go along. Well, Fred, on the optimistic side, your wife is an optimist with Trump derangement syndrome, obviously. Maybe she'll learn to like certain brands of cat food. I'm thinking the folks at Hamburger Helper could jack up sales with some rebranding there. What do you think? Anyway, Fred goes on to say, Johnny, by the way, how about that Bitcoin, huh? I'd love to hear you discuss what it's like to convert Bitcoin to dollars or local funny money, because up here in California, the only way I know is to have it go directly to a bank account. He says, I'm wondering how it works down there in Guatemala or El Salvador. Can Strike or other exchanges work through the local banks? And one more thing, Johnny, even though I don't seem to be a candidate yet, another subject I'd be interested in you discussing is how to get Guatemalan temporary residency. He finishes off by saying, I try not to miss any of your shows, and I've been listening for a long, long time now. Signed, Fred from Northern California. Well, Fred, thanks for that. And about the Bitcoin thing in Guatemala and El Salvador, they've got various avenues to switch back and forth from Bitcoin to fiat money. In fact, there are some gringos and expats who've set up their own legit exchanges on and off ramps within both countries, Salvador and Guatemala. By the way, when you're in El Salvador or Guatemala or anywhere in Central America, they don't say El Salvador. They just say Salvador. Just like Canadians say Costa Rica and everyone else says Costa Rica. In El Salvador or Panama or Nicaragua, Mexico, whatever. When they're talking about El Salvador, they don't say the L. They say Salvador. That means a person from El Salvador is not an El Salvadoreño. He's just a Salvadoreño. By the way, if you're in El Salvador and you want to exchange small amounts of Bitcoin and fiat money, you could do it at any local Bitcoin ATM. I'm seeing them all over the place. Though I've never seen anyone use one, I've seen them all over the place. As well as little blue ATMs called Chivo ATMs. If you remember, Chivo is the name of the local Salvadoreño national wallet, the one they put $30 worth of Bitcoin in for everyone in the country a couple of years back. And as for Fred's last question about getting temporary residency in Guatemala, the latest word on that process from local Latino lawyers is to skip it. Go right to permanent residency. It's easier and faster. And all you have to do now is get a clean FBI report and prove that you get at least $1,500 a month continuously from either a pension, Social Security, a trust, or rental income. There are lots of ways to fulfill that requirement. But you also have to come down to Guatemala for 5 to 10 working days to get the process going, get the paperwork underway, etc. All right, moving on. Here's a short but interesting email from Jeffrey, one of our Expat Insider Seminar alumni. He sent me a link to a study. It's a study showing the countries in the world with the biggest increase in life expectancy in the last 50 years. And the interesting part is this. In all of the countries in both South and North America, the three countries with the largest increase in life expectancy over the last 50 years, believe it or not, number one is Guatemala with a 27.1% increase over those years. Number two is El Salvador with a 26.2% increase. And Bolivia is number three with 26.0% increase over that 50-year span. Some of the main reasons are better hygiene, better nutrition, and more calories consumed daily. Which makes you wonder, if all that's been happening in the last 50 years, what about that thing called global warming everyone's been whining about? Shouldn't life expectancies be going down? Yeah, isn't it something? We know it's going down in the U.S., Canada, and Europe, amongst the vaxxed, right? I'm sure you've seen the latest reports about all-cause mortalities. A huge increase in young adults who rarely died from COVID itself. But somehow, after they were completely vaxxed, died well before their time allotted on insurance company actuarial tables. Insurance companies are reporting up to 40% more deaths in young working people. People covered by group employer insurance plans. And with insurance companies whose payouts are predicted by actuarial tables. Governments may try to hide the facts, but the insurance companies are going to blow the lid on this thing. They're saying that 40% increase is strictly due to the vaccine, because all working people were forced to get vaxxed or lose their jobs. But you knew that already, right? All right, our next email comes from Dave in Amarillo, Texas. Let me grab my Dave reference sheet here. Yeah, this is Dave number 64. He says, Johnny, could you provide an update on the health insurance options available through Guatemalan banks? I'm inching closer to 60 years old myself and thinking I may want to restart my residency process there in order to get a bank account and sign up for that cheap health insurance offered by banks. Do Salvadorian banks offer the same health insurance coverage? He says, thanks very much, Johnny. I still want to make it to one of your seminars, but that will probably have to wait till next year. All right. Thanks for that, Dave. Just to remind everyone once again, down here in Latin America, your bank, the one you bank at, will probably offer health insurance. You longtime listeners might remember I mentioned only about 10% of Latinos have private health care insurance. Why? Because they all get free national health care. But we all know nothing's for nothing. And as shitty as those national health care hospitals might be, they're better than nothing, though not by much. Now, like everything in Latin America, everything's on lag time. That includes private health care insurance. You know, when I first got down here to Latin America 30-something years ago, there were very few private health insurance options. Almost no one had private health care insurance except transplanted gringos working in administrative and executive positions in transnational companies like Siemens, Volkswagen, Toyota, Walmart, Costco, and gringos and expats and foreigners working in embassies. Naturally, health insurance companies want to expand. Every business wants to expand. They found the best way to do that was to partner up with banks. Well, I found out by hook and crook from an insurance executive I know that when private insurance companies first came into existence here in Latin America, they started with car insurance, and they soon discovered Latin Americans may want insurance, but they're bad payers. In other words, they all start out with good intentions, buy a policy, pay monthly, and suddenly, monthly payments arrive later and later. Late payments turn into missed payments. The insurance companies send out notices. They phone people up, but still, payments are missed and policies lapse. Just a nightmare for insurance brokers. So, some 30 years ago when they first started thinking about offering health insurance, they weren't going to go down that road again. That's why they partnered up with banks. Because then they could debit your savings or credit card account monthly. So, no one would miss a payment. It would be automatically deducted. That's the reason why so many banks here in Latin America have affiliated health insurance and car insurance programs. Just a little background there. Even so, not even 10% of Latin Americans have private health care insurance. And get this. The latest figures show that only 17% of Latin Americans who own cars have car insurance, even though by law you're supposed to have minimum liability third-party coverage, which really is cheap as dirt. But you'll find out if you get into an accident. You better have coverage because the odds are great that the other guy won't. But back to banks and health insurance. Now, the thing is, because of American FATCA laws and all the paperwork that needs to be filed if you have a foreign bank account, very few Latin American banks will let you open an account unless you're a permanent resident of that country. In other words, you just can't go on vacation to Guatemala, Salvador, or Costa Rica, wherever, walk into a bank and say, I'd like to open a bank account, like you could do 10 or 15 years ago with ease. They just don't want you anymore. We're just too much trouble for Latin American bank administrators, too much paperwork to file. You know how those government maggots up in the States have their hands in your pocket no matter where you live? So, pretty much the only way to get a bank account in Latin America is to have residency in that country. Because then they figure you're going to live in that country and there'll be a lot of movement through your account and a bank will make some money off you. Now, referring back to Dave's question, a bank in Guatemala called Banco Industrial has the very best health insurance program, but You don't have to have an account there, and to do that, you must be a permanent resident. Now, there are many other banks in Guatemala that offer health insurance programs, but most of them have an age limit to get in of either 59 or 64. And once you're in a plan, usually there's no age limit to stay in the plan. Though I've seen a few plans that'll kick you off when you turn 99, which is okay. So your goal should be, if you're living in Guatemala, to get residency, get a bank account at Banco Industrial and get on that plan. It's a fantastic plan. Generally, you won't be paying more than $100 a month. Last I checked, there's a $250 per year deductible. What's yours? $2,500, $5,000, or $10,000? Now, as far as El Salvador and most of Latin America, it's the same thing. Banks have health insurance programs. By the way, Dave, if you come to my next seminar, you'll see I spend about 3 hours on Latin American health insurance. I go through about 10 different insurance plans, bank plans, private plans. I go through health insurance plans available to gringos and expats living in Guatemala, Colombia, Ecuador, Dominican Republic. We review the coverages, the costs. It's really a pretty complicated issue because almost all policies are in Spanish. Though I've translated many of them into English and changed the local funny money to dollars. And I make copies of those insurance plans available to everyone who comes to my seminar. Another very good reason to come on down. All right, before we close out here, I want to mention that I saw one of the greatest acts of kindness in a long, long time. I was in a big supermarket down here in El Salvador. In front of me was a tall, skinny Latino who had some very basic food items. Bread, salami, sack of flour, dried beans, some stuff for a baby, you know, diapers and that. I'd say the guy was maybe 23 years old. Obviously a minimum wage kind of guy, a member of the working poor. Well, he was in front of me, put his stuff down on the little conveyor belt, and right in front of him was a 60-something-year-old gringa lady paying for her stuff with a credit card. She spoke Spanish to the cashier, so she'd been down here a while. Her Spanish was pretty good. She paid her bill, took her bags, and left. And the guy in front of me with the bread and the diapers, etc., pulled out his wallet, waiting for the cashier to ring up his stuff. She said, "Don't worry about it. It's paid for." She said, "The lady in front of you gave me $20 and said, I'm to give you the change if there's any money left over." How about that? A totally selfless act. The lady didn't even want him to know. She didn't want to make a scene or put him in an awkward position thinking, you know, this rich lady's paying for a poor guy's stuff. Anyhow, he couldn't thank her because she was gone. Everyone ought to try that sometime, don't you think?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.